You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Once again, Dave Callender and Dave Tindall with you to preview two events this week. We've got the Joburg Open on the European Tour, and on the PGA Tour we have the RSM Classic this week. Good to have your company. Dave Tindall joined me on Skype today. Dave, first of all, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Dave. And congratulations, Dave, for picking the Masters winner, Dustin Johnson.
It wasn't a left field selection, was it, Dustin Johnson? But it was such a dominant display from Dustin Johnson. He took command on Saturday and saw it through for a 5-shot win on Sunday. What did you make to the tournament? I thought it was superb. Obviously not the conditions we would like for Augusta. It was Augusta in November rather than Augusta in April. But the best man on the week won, and that was without question, in my opinion. And I thoroughly enjoyed the tournament. What did you make of it?
Yeah, maybe all this is based on how well you did financially. I always enjoyed the Masters. I love the Masters, but I just thought it was slightly compromised this year.
Yeah.
It was just too soft, basically. There were just balls that were sticking in places that shouldn't stick to. Visually, it didn't quite look as good, obviously. There was that. I mean, you can get beyond that, maybe. It's more the playability of the course.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's fantastic, but what Dustin Johnson did, but you just kind of like go, oh, when someone wins the Masters with 20 unders, it means something wasn't quite okay in terms of how the course was playing. I mean, just maybe even if you thought, because sometimes you get winners that you win by 10 and 11 and it sort of skews the rest of the field and how it actually played, but you've got guys there shooting 15 under and doing crazy scores that have never been seen in the past before and not even winning.
Yep.
So it just played too easy for me. I mean, it's brilliant that it was on and everything. They did great to put it on. There was even a few spectators, wasn't there, here and there. I don't quite know. Did you see that opening, the tee shots, when there's a picture going around of when Jack and Gary Player hit their ceremonial tee shots? Seems to be about 200 people watching.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in terms of a classic Masters, in terms of what we normally see, to me, brilliant to see Dustin Johnson win. The right man won, but overall, as a spectacle, it was just a little bit reduced for me.
Yeah, I understand exactly where you're coming from and those sentiments as well, because you were alluding to Cameron Smith there, weren't you? The first player ever to Masters to shoot all four rounds in the 60s and still didn't win. So he can feel slightly aggrieved, I think. And we saw mud balls play a big part, particularly the opening couple of days, didn't we? And that's something that definitely unsettled one of your selections, Bubba Watson, on the week. And even though the telecast in the US, they're not allowed to call them mud balls. They're called organic matter balls, apparently. we saw that play a big part, and because the Augusta is such a traditional golf club, they like to play the ball up, don't they, play the ball down, even though it would have been maybe prudent to play a lift, keep clean and place for the first couple of days.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, on day one, they'd started, hadn't they, so they couldn't really do it for that. But yeah, there were a lot of good shots that went sort of punished, and it got to some people. But ultimately, Dustin Johnson just did everything right, didn't he? I don't know if you saw any of the strokes going putting stats for him.
Yeah.
He was just fantastic, weren't they?
Well, he was just phenomenal in all areas.
Every department.
Every department. And I thought it was telling how controlled he was on Sunday as well, because there was that moment when the lead was reduced to one and then he hit that wonderful iron shot into six. And from there on, throughout that final round, he was always in complete command, wasn't he, Dustin Johnson? And I think it was validation for him, wasn't it, as well? Because even though a whole golf career shouldn't come down to 16 days of the year, it does in the end, doesn't it, Dave? Because we remember these players for the majors they've won, not the regular tour events, not even the WGCs or the players. It's all about the major championships at the end of a long career. And he'd only won one up until that point, and this was validation, wasn't it, for Dustin Johnson? And it means he'll go down as one of the greats of this generation, I think, now.
Yeah, and then obviously, how many more does he win from here? I had a quick look at our betting for next year's Masters. It's out there already, Masters 2021. We've only got to wait until April. Dustin Johnson, 15-2 favourite. DeChambeau, we'll come on to him in a minute, 9-1. Rahm McIlroy, 10-1. Thomas, 11s. Koepka, 14s. Schauffele, 18s. Matsuyama, Cantlay, Reed, Hatton. Won't be back in Hatton at 28s. So sort of similar-ish, I guess, to this time, but Dustin Johnson deserved market leader. DeChambeau, then, what did you make of it?
Oh, he was entertaining, wasn't he? It was superb to watch him, wasn't it, go around on Thursday and Friday. I just think things unravelled for him, but I'd be concerned about how aggressive he's going to be in an April Masters, personally, to think about getting stuck in. But he did show that he can reduce this course to almost a pitch and putt in some areas, didn't he? And did he have 121 yards into 13 one of the 4 days as well? So I think it's a course that he can attack, but he'll have to be a little bit more cautious in areas in the April Masters. I think these were perfect conditions for Bryson this week.
Yeah, I don't know, he could sort of criticise what he was trying to do. I just think he didn't do it very well.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
I don't know, he just seemed to be maybe just not timing it right, and at that level and speed, and if you're a bit off, it's not right, is it? So he didn't seem to be hitting it incredibly far a lot of the time. I think he just had a lot of sort of slight mishits for him that weren't quite right, and then his approach play was the big problem. I mean, he was obviously first in driving distance, but I think he was like 54th in greens and regulation, so something wasn't right. His putting stats were decent enough,
but this is still a second shot golf course, isn't it, Augusta National?
Yeah,
and that was something that was referenced on last week's podcast when comparing him to the credentials Dustin Johnson had, that Bryson DeChambeau's big talent and his big weapon is his driver, and it's somewhat negated by the conditions of Augusta National, where it's a second shot golf course, and if he's not on his absolute A game in that department, he's going to struggle, and he wasn't there. And he referenced dizziness afterwards as well, that he's been feeling a little bit under the weather. Maybe that played a part, but as you mentioned, I think it was about execution. He just didn't have his best stuff on the week, did he?
No, not at all. Yeah, 54th in greens and regulation, hit just 61%, which ultimately wasn't good enough. I was trying to think of some theory where if you're the longest, highest hitter, do you get more mud balls because the ball's coming down from a bigger height?
I think we saw that with Dustin Johnson.
He
definitely had to contend with a few. I thought the shot of his round on Sunday was that second into 10, Dave. I don't know what you thought, but that was with mud on the ball there, it came out perfectly. He hit the draw into the centre of that 10th green, and yes, it felt like a statement shot from Dustin Johnson.
Plus as well, I mean, plus that's one he pulled off. Maybe in some ways just as impressive in terms of how he was thinking. He had a mud ball on 13. Was it in the last round or the round before?
And
he just laid
round
up. He just thought, well, I'm not going to bother. You know, this could send it anywhere. I'll lay up and do it that way. So he just had everything going. I think because he's not the most eloquent, he was quite eloquent at the end, but we kind of think maybe that translates to him not having a great golfing brain, but he has.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to know now where it stops for him, what the ceiling is, because he's got two. I think a lot of people sometimes say, don't they, the second is the hardest to win. You can get like... not anyone can win a major, but you can get like Sean McKeel winning a major or somebody. Well, they're never going to win two, are they? But now he's got two. Does that quickly become three and four? Because he just seems to have the complete game, doesn't he? And the temperament.
He is the best player in the world right now. I think that's without question. Any eye catchers for April then? Did we learn enough from this Masters to suggest that it's going to translate to form in April?
Well, we'll have to say. I mean, the kind of fascinating one is Rory McIlroy. Yeah. I was just checking just now. He shot lower over the final 54 holes than Justin Johnson. Shot 13 under McIlroy the last 54 holes. So Johnson beaten by 10 in round one. McIlroy won the next three rounds by a shot. So he's just got to get something in the bag, hasn't he, in that first round? A 71 even.
It was such a Rory McIlroy performance, though, wasn't it? How many times have we said this after a Masters with McIlroy, that he's just got to do this, he's just got to do that? It will be fascinating to see if he can put four rounds together in the Masters in April.
It takes
a little bit of a leap of faith, doesn't it?
Yeah, we think back to his previous major wins. He's gone out and started fast with like a 66, 67. So he's just somehow got to do that. I think if he does that, you know, would it be almost make more sense to back? I know his price will be short. Back him in running, give him. You know, see if he gets off to a good start. But some of his play in that first round, that shot into 16 when it not just went in the water, went in the middle of the water.
Unbelievable.
And he sort of went, oh my God. And you're thinking, I can't think of a player in the field who can be that far off, who's low. You know, they say it's about limiting the bad stuff, and his bad stuff just comes out incredibly, doesn't it? And you think he can't even play anymore. And it's just extraordinary how poor he was in that first round, and then there he goes and then plays brilliantly afterwards.
What about Tiger as well? 10 on 12.
And then to come back with five birdies. Yeah. In a funny way, what Tiger did at the end of this Masters makes it an absolute part of his body of work. The fact that he played those holes at 5 under after his 10, that's astonishing.
Yeah.
That sort of says absolutely everything about him, doesn't it?
And that says to me that he can still compete in a Masters and maybe an Open in the future. I'm not sure he can win a US Open or a PGA. PGA Championship possibly, but I don't think a US Open is going to be... I don't think he'll ever win a US Open again.
No, well, I think the US Open, because maybe DeChambeau showed that, but it's... I think where subtlety is removed, and that's the problem I had with this Master, some of the subtlety went.
Yeah.
So I think that went against people like Tiger, where it was more just hitting, it plods down. So the fact that he finished 38th with a 10. If you give him par on that hole, he's around the top sort of 15 again, isn't he? Top. And that's with probably a bit of a bad back as well. He was sort of looked a bit ginger, didn't he, picking the ball out of the hole.
Yeah, definitely on Saturday, it definitely affected him, didn't it, the back?
Yeah, so you kind of think in a fast-running Masters, he can still contend.
Should we move on to this week, Dave?
Yes.
Let's do that. We've got the Joburg Open first up. Christian Bezuidenhout, who is the 14-1 favourite with William Hill. Matthew Jordan, Adrian Ortegi, Joost Louten, Brandon Stone, Gary Kiggo, Adrian Au, Saul 20-1, 22-1 and bigger the rest. Just the one course in operation for the Joburg Open this week. They're using the Firethorn course at Rand Park for this championship. The course usually sees a huge field spread across two courses for the opening couple of days of the South African Open. We've got a smaller field here, and the Firethorn course is in operation. It's been used for three of the four rounds in each of the last two South African Opens, and was used for this event back in 2017 as well. And the Joburg Open returning to the schedule for the first time in 3 years. And it kicks off a three-week swing in South Africa leading up to the DP World Tour Championship. This course measures 7,500 yards, but the actual yardage is much shorter because players are at altitude in Johannesburg this week. And if the last couple of South African Opens are anything to go by, Dave, we'll see low scoring this week, and it's a field topped by a South African at 14-1 here, the Joburg Open, Dave.
Yeah, Christian Bezuidenhout, but obviously he's coming from Augusta, which might be a bit of a disadvantage. It's a tournament. I think what you said there, it being a three-week swing, I think personally I might be holding a few bets back until I've seen this one.
Yeah.
You might just get more of a feel for how people are settling. I do expect it to go to one of the better names, to be honest. There's not 500 players in the field anymore. And generally, these events go to home players as well. Even though there's a few good Euros in the field. But, for example, Hugh Slauten, I checked, is one of the guys who does a good blog, up-to-date blog, and he put it terribly in Cyprus. And he lost 7 strokes. He didn't come across as someone who's about to win, so he's one of the better European raiders. So I ruled him out. Tegui, obviously, at 20s. Arnaus at 20s. They're kind of there, but I personally want a home player, so I've got one of the high-ranked South Africans. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I've just got the one selection. I could have had two, perhaps, but it's not an event I've got a great deal of interest in this week. And like you, it's more of a watching brief for me this week, this Joburg Open. But I've got one pick as well. Do you want to lead off?
Yeah, Brandon Stone for me.
Yeah, I can see him going well. 20-1.
Yeah, he's obviously one of the class acts of the field, of the home players. There's no, apart from Bezuidenhout, the normal kind of top South African boys aren't there. He is coming into some nice form since lockdown. He's played pretty well. He had a 6 in the English Championship, and then the last 4 starts in sort of mid-September to mid-October. 3 top 20s there, 14th Portugal Masters, a couple of good events in Scotland, 19th and 16th, putted really well in the Scottish Championship, gained 7 strokes with the putter. He did miss the South African Open held here in early January, but before that, the previous one in SA Open 2018, he was 7th, so that's good enough. Mm. Knows how to win in South Africa. I just think he's got an extra edge to him. And I don't know, I would have him more sort of 14-16, so yeah, I thought 20s is fine.
Okay, 20-1 Brandon Stone. I'm just a few points bigger. A player that I've mentioned quite a few times on this podcast recently, Johannes Veerman is my sole selection here at 28-1. Just going to play half a point each way on Veerman. I'm awaiting his breakthrough win, as I've mentioned. This looks like a perfect opportunity to me as well. Veerman was tied 4th in the Cyprus Showdown on his most recent start and logged a decent finish in the Portugal Masters, which was won by George Cutsea when tied 8th a couple of months back. He actually ranks 3rd in stroke average on the tour this season, behind just Tommy Fleetwood and Andy Sullivan, which is superb and testament to his quality. And he's got a little bit of experience at this track as well. When he was half the player he is now, he made the cut back in the Joburg Open in 2017, but missed it after 54 holes, was MDF there. And this could be the week that he breaks through, as far as I'm concerned. And 28-1 I thought was fair in this field, so Johannes Veerman is my sole selection.
Yeah, jolly good. A couple of others I quickly looked at. 50s, Alexander Levy, I think, is coming back. I saw him interviewed in Cyprus, and it sounds like he's turned things around and is coming back. 50-1 in this field. A good Levy would be right at the front, wouldn't he, with the 20-1 shots?
Yeah.
So he's ahead of the handicapper, maybe. And Jaco Ahlers at 50-1. He's done a lot of winning in South Africa over the last few years, so he might be one to contend at 50s.
Yeah, I liked Shivanka Sharma, who's obviously on many people's radar, I think, at the moment, given his resurrection recently. And he won the Joburg Open back in 2017 as well. And I'll be fascinated to see how Daniel van Tonder goes as well. He's won 4 of his last 6 starts on the Sunshine Tour, hasn't he? He's about the sort of price I expected, actually, at 22-1. I think he opened 28-1 with William Hill, and that was snapped up. He's 22-1 now. It'll be fascinating to see if that form that he's shown on that tour can translate onto the European Tour proper. But it's not that much of a stronger field than the ones he's been decimating.
Yeah, fair point. One final mention, Dean Burmester was 5th in the Italian Open last time. He's 30-1. Another home player, always tops the driving distance stats. Gained 8 strokes tee to green in Italy, so his long game seems to be in good shape, because some of his long game stats were terrible in kind of the English events. He was losing kind of 8 and 7 and 6, and so a big turnaround there in the Italian Open. Course form's a bit mixed. He's got four events here, three missed cuts, but a 19th in this event when it was held here. So maybe you could look at the 19th and say, well, he can.
Yeah.
And then even in the two South African Opens where he did miss the cut, he did open 68 and 67. So there's enough there to think at 30-1, you wouldn't be surprised if he's right up on the leaderboard on Sunday.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? He's a huge hitter with barely any iron game and an incredible putter, isn't he, Dean Burmester? He's got a weird game. Burmester is available at 30-1 here with William Hill. Any others worthy of mention before we move on, Dave?
No, not really. As I say, I'll just be keeping an eye out, really, and to maybe look for the weeks ahead.
Let's move on to the RSM Classic then. Here at William Hill, top price guaranteed on the top 10. Plus, we are paying 8 places on the RSM Classic on the PGA Tour as well. So that's a nice boost if you're fancying each way bets and you fancy one of those at the top of the betting as well. Webb Simpson heads the market at 10-1. Tyrrell Hatton is 18-1. Sungjae Im, 20-1. Tommy Fleetwood, 22s. Matthew Fitzpatrick and Russell Henley, both 28-1. Harris English is 30s. Sebastian Munoz is 33s, along with Louis Oosthuizen. Jason Day is 33-1, and it's 35-1 and bigger the remainder. The PGA Tour event comes from Sea Island in Georgia. And I suppose it gives some of those that were in the heat of battle at the Masters last week the chance to relax on a pair of golf courses that aren't overly demanding, Dave, in a nice part of the world as well. The Seaside course is the host course, and it's a short par 70, measuring just over 7,000 yards. Each player will also get a circuit of the Plantation course, which plays to a par of 72 and is only slightly longer. It's one of those weeks on the PGA Tour, Dave, where accuracy matters more than distance, which is a rarity nowadays, and the Bermuda greens at these venues run perfectly. And it should be a fun week, and it should be a low-scoring week, plenty of birdies made as well, and the weather really the only defence of these two golf courses.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, it's almost the perfect follow-up, isn't it, to Augusta, which used to be the role played by Hilton Head.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is almost the perfect stand-in, isn't it, for the week after. It's been arranged quite cleverly on the schedule to put this another Georgia event right up against the Masters. And I mean, I had this thought, and then I checked on Twitter, and I think a lot of people are saying it. I think you could literally have about 45 picks in this event.
Yeah.
You know, some weeks where you think, oh, I'm struggling to. So many here that seem to have good chances. So, in that sense, maybe it's tricky finding the right ones, but at least you're not short on options.
I like the fact that you put Sea Island into Google, and the next suggested word is mafia. And this has got to be the worst mafia you'll ever see, the Sea Island mafia. But it is a place in the world where many of the top PGA Tour professionals settle, because it is such a wonderful location to play golf. And Zach Johnson's one of those that resides at Sea Island, and he was influential in putting this tournament together, wasn't he, as well? He's 60-1 this week, and he might attract a few. What do you see as the main areas to focus on in terms of statistics this week, a statistical analysis for Sea Island?
Yeah, I think short game counts for a lot. But by the way, just on your point, when you put in Sea Island, that's your Google, Dave.
Okay.
We've all got our own individual Google.
I've tapped it in the past, perhaps, then.
Yeah, that's how it works, isn't it? Sometimes you say, oh, look, type that in, and then someone else will get a different result. A little bit of insight there to how we're all controlled.
Absolutely. What have you got when you type Sea Island into Google?
Well, I'll probably have the same as a golf person with lots of golf entries in there.
Yeah.
But I imagine if you ask someone completely different with no interest in golf, they might get Sea Island turtles or something. Don't know why I've come up with that. But
you're all
get
about
my point.
Yeah, I get your point. You're all about the short game this week, then?
I think so. I mean, short game, it's three of the rounds at Seaside Course, which is very linksy.
Yeah.
And there's enough, aren't there, correlating courses that we have on tour, Hilton Head being one of them. So I've certainly leaned on that, the kind of more, the shorter hitter, the more creative, short game, good putter kind of thing, who plays well by the seaside.
You've got three picks here, haven't you?
I have, yes.
I've just got the two, so I'll let you go first.
Yeah, just a quick point on, there's the idea, isn't there, that you don't want to put up anyone who was in contention last week.
Yeah.
Who was in contention last week? Because basically the way Dustin Johnson started round three, that you didn't really think anyone else was going to win from there, did you? Well, I didn't.
No, I just suppose it's playing four rounds at a Masters where you've got to be fully focused. That I don't think it matters that much this week, in all honesty. It's not something that, if I really fancied a player that had played four rounds at the Masters and finished a never near a top 10, for instance, it wouldn't put me off this week.
Yeah. Well, I know that there's some even finished higher, that people are just saying they were in contention. Maybe they're more going to benefit from it because they weren't meant to be, and it's not like they were... You know, say someone had gone blow for blow with Dustin Johnson, then was playing here, you'd be a bit wary, but I think most of them probably just had a good week. I mean, the main pick for me, or the one I'm picking with best price on him at 35, is Shane Lowry.
Okay.
On the slate, they're 25th. He finished at Augusta, which just sounds so. On the plus side, he was never going to win, and he wasn't under the gun, if you're playing that angle about being under the gun. But for me, the 25th, it was his best ever Masters. And to be honest, that wasn't hard because he'd missed three of his previous four cuts. But I think it was a good 25th because he played quite a lot with Tiger, didn't he? So I don't know whether he just picked up some tips or just playing with Tiger and outscoring him probably gave him some confidence. But it was a continuation of some good form since he's gone back to the States from Lowry's. Also 11th in the Houston Open. Obviously, he's the Open champion. He can play well on a course by the sea. It's a fairly obvious thing to say. And then if we're using Hilton Head as a good point, well, he was third there 2 years ago. Well, last year, 2000. I forget, 2019 seems like 2 years ago. It's weird, isn't it? So he was there in 2019. He was third at Hilton Head. So I think he'll really take to this week's course. And I think he'll have even though he wasn't outstanding at the Masters, I think he did well enough to think, that was actually a good week and I can build on that. So I think 35-1, Shane Lowry, the Open champion, is worth a go.
Yeah, it's it was the first time he'd ever played with Tiger, wasn't it?
Yeah, which is odd.
I thought I found that really strange. I thought he'd have played with Tiger many times in the past, but yeah. I think he'll have enjoyed that experience, won't he? He might have even been a little... I know he's the Open champion. He might have even been a little bit nervous, Dave, perhaps.
I think he said he was, wasn't he? I think there was a quote saying he did feel nervous.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lowry, your headline selection here. Yeah. I think this is a great spot for Russell Henley at 28-1. I think he should be a few points shorter. I feel lacking serious strength in depth. I expect him to be bang there. He's finished 4th, 6th and 10th in three consecutive outings at Sea Island from 2015 to 2017, and he's back in that sort of form now. Jason Kokrak mowed Henley down in the CJ Cup, but he didn't do an awful lot wrong in that performance, then was tied for 4th at Sherwood the following week. He went off a short price at Houston. No surprise to see that he had a little bit of a letdown there. He still produced superb tee to green numbers en route to a top 30 finish. He's won the Sony Open, which correlates well with this event, Waialae being a coastal track that favours accuracy rather than power. His putting has been a real issue, but he was good at the CJ Cup, puts Bermuda a lot better than the other surfaces on tour as well, and if his striking remains on song, he's going to give himself a ton of chances this week, and I really like him each way in this field at 28-1, so I'll play Russell Henley, 1.5 points each way as my headline selection this week, Dev.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I know what you mean, yeah. I don't know, I thought he'd been a bit shorter in the betting.
Yeah, I would have him personally alongside Tommy Fleetwood at 22-1 this week, but that's just my gut feeling on the event.
Yeah, I'm going for, as my second pick, another British player, GB and Ireland player, Ian Poulter.
Okay.
At 55-1, I think we've got
that's
him.
That's it, 55s.
Yeah. he's played great basically since the US Open where he missed the cut. He was sixth in the Scottish Open, fifth at Wentworth. Again, he's had some problems at Wentworth, so maybe like Larry at Augusta, that may be worth more than it is initially, even though fifth is excellent, however you cook it. 12th in the CJ Cup, another really good effort in a class field. And then another top 25 at the Masters, which was, you know, given that it was a long course, and Poulter held his own to a large extent. One of the things with him, which I think's maybe helped me separate him a bit from the other 45 people on my shortlist. Look at his record in November. It's absurd. It's just brilliant. He's got four wins on the European Tour in November, two more in absolutely late October, the last couple of days. Also won the Dunlop Phoenix in Japan in November. Don't know what it is, but biorhythms, whatever you call it. But at this time of year, he seems to just absolutely flourish. So Poulter just stood out for me from the pack. And
yeah,
again, this style of golf, well, he's got a second and a third in Open Championships, so he can definitely flourish by the sea. Just in good form, good recent scrambling numbers. Course not too long for him. Has had one go at it, and he did decent. It was 4 years ago. He was 36, opened with a pair of 67s. Just had a slightly flatter weekend, but I think having had a good look at it already, I think he can come here in his present form and do well. And Bermuda grass, well, he's been based in Florida a long time, hasn't he, Poulter? So
yeah,
he's put some Bermuda all his practice rounds. So I think Poulter can follow up a solid week at the Masters with a good one here.
Very good. Ian Poulter at 55-1. My second pick is 80-1, Harold Varner. Is my second selection. Catches the eye at the price, mainly because his ball striking demands attention, really. He's finished 7th at the Wyndham, 13th at the Shriners, 15th in Houston in 3 of his last 6 starts, and gained 10 strokes tee to green on his latest outing in Texas. He's not known as the longest player on tour, but he is one of the most accurate. And it was his short game numbers that stood out in Houston. That's something that you referenced as being a major positive this week. The putter continues to blow hot and cold, but he is pretty streaky historically with the flat stick, so got to hope he goes well or has a going week with that club. But his work around the greens has been very good recently, which augurs well. And he's had a couple of starts at Sea Island as well. A low-key 68th on debut in 2015, followed by a much stronger performance when 23rd here in 2018, and I can see another improvement on that this week. So 80-1 Harold Varner is my second and final selection for the event.
Yeah, again, I think he was one of my 45, so yeah, I agree with that. I mean, sometimes it might just come down to, and this I think with me, how do you pick someone? Maybe you'd go for someone who you've been following for a few weeks, and now if they won, you'd kick yourself a bit. So I'm having backed him on a number of tournaments, maybe in a similar vein. I'm going to go with Denny McCarthy for my final pick.
Yeah, 66-1.
Yeah, I thought it'd be 50s when I looked, to be honest. I was quite pleased that he was that price because he's got the obvious converging trends, hasn't he? He's got the course form. He was 8th last year, shot 62 in round 2, which was some effort. And then even the year before, when he was 46, he finished fast, 65 in round 4. So this will be his fourth knock. He's got better each time, and obviously having finished 8th in his last go, hopefully he can continue that sequence. Then current form, 4th in Bermuda 2 starts ago, obviously that was played on Bermuda grass, and then 2 starts before, 6th at the Sanderson Farm, so he's in good nick. 9th at the Wyndham, that's maybe another correlating course, a kind of short one with a shorter sort of creative hitters do well. I mean, what's he been first in strokes game put in the last 2 years on the PGA Tour? It's not been maybe his absolute strong suit in recent months, but you think, you know, it's not going to suddenly desert him. He gained 4 strokes with the putter in both the Sanderson Farms and at Shriner, so it's bubbling under a little bit. So I just think put it all together and 66-1 on a player that I will really kick myself having backed him maybe 2 or 3 times since lockdown. So yeah, I thought that price was definitely easy enough for me to try and land Denny McCarthy, because has he won before? I don't think he has he?
Denny McCarthy, No win on tour, I don't think.
Yeah, and this has been pretty good for first-time winners, this event. So again, yeah, it's an obvious little extra bonus for him. So yeah, Denny McCarthy's 66-1, but there are so many. But I guess you pay your money, you take your choice, don't you?
Yeah, like you, I think. Like everyone. There's many you could have a look at. Mackenzie Hughes was one that stood out. This is all about short game this week. He's in the betting at 50-1. I thought Russell Knox would go okay as well. He's 90-1, Russell Knox. So there were, I mentioned Zach Johnson as well, been playing a lot better. Yeah. He's 60-1. There were a few that stood out. Taylor Gooch was another one at 60-1. So there were a whole host of names that I conjured with in the lead up to this championship. Just mention the ones that stood out to you. Maybe pick a couple of them.
That we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, that we haven't mentioned yet.
Sebastian Munoz, who just seems to be playing great. Neiman, Kistner, Harmon, Hughes, Doc Redmond.
Yeah.
I'm basically just reading out the betting here. Brendan Todd likes this sort of test. He's maybe gone off a little bit.
Yeah.
Even Lee Westwood at 66s, possibly.
Yeah.
Looking for the open angle. And on we go.
Okay, let's wrap up at this juncture then and recap your selections for the week, Dave.
Yeah, so in South Africa, I'll go a point each way on Brandon Stone at 20s.
Okay, I'm going with Johannes Veerman, just half a point each way at 28-1.
Yeah, and on the PGA Tour, the RSM Classic, I'll go a point each way on each of these three picks. Shane Lowry at 35-1, Ian Poulter at 55-1, and Denny McCarthy at 66-1.
Just a couple of selections for me. I'm going to go 1.5 points each way, Russell Henley, keen on him at 28-1, and I'll play a point each way, Harold Varner at 80-1 as my two selections in the RSM Classic. Dave, thank you for your company.
Yeah, cheers, Dave.
Always a pleasure. And you can follow myself and Dave on Twitter if you wish to do so, at Dave Tyndall Golf and at D Kellner. And we will hopefully be back next week with more golf action. Thank you for joining us. Check out all the betting at williamhill.com and on the app. And don't forget, ahead of the RSM Classic, we are top price guaranteed on the top 10. Plus, we are paying 8 places each way as well. Enjoy the golfing week. And myself and Dave will speak to you in the not too distant future. Good luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.